that's totally like fitday.com. That's what I like.
Ran for an hour and 30 minutes. And
yeah, but it's on over there.
And you go back in.
Well, you don't. Yeah, they haven't done the call yet, so.
No, just out of curiosity. Were you?
Well, I can't think of the name of them. Like the little.
The LIO will come in and do the.
Yeah, and one is on there.
Okay.
He talked about, because right now I can't do anything other than the red light's on, so if he has that other one on, then we should be able to hear him. But I don't have access
we,
to that.
We don't hear you. They said if there's a little round thing that has a little red light on it.
Because I won't get him through there. I won't get him through there.
The Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today's date is March 10th, 2011. The time is 9:34. I want to thank the committee members for the delayed start in the hearing today. With us, we have Senator Giesel, Senator Pasfan, myself, Wilikowski. Senator Kukesh is excused. I think Senator Meyer will be here shortly. Also in the audience, we have Representative Sadler. Welcome to the committee, Representative Sadler. And we're trying something new. I don't know that this has actually ever been done in a legislative committee hearing, but we are and here's Senator Meyer joining us right now. We are conferencing this committee through a webcam, so an innovation in legislative technology here. Today we're hearing from the Alaska Veterans Foundation on homelessness among veterans. Veterans have a disproportionately high rate of homelessness, and many face special challenges relating to post-traumatic stress disorder. A top priority for homeless veterans is secure, safe, clean housing that offers a supportive environment free of drugs and alcohol. We have invited a number of people to appear before us, including Rick Daverage of the Alaska Veterans Foundation and a panel he has put together. We asked them to discuss the challenge of meeting the needs of homeless veterans in Alaska and to share a proposal they're developing to address the challenge. As are many of Alaska's homeless, our presenters are in Anchorage to bring their faces before us and to test the possibilities of using web-based video conferencing. We are going to make Alaska legislative history today by broadcasting video through Office communicator, thanks to support from the Legislative Information Services staff. And audio will also be broadcast through the regular audio teleconference system for record-keeping purposes. Mr. Daverage, could you please put yourself on the record, introduce your panelists, and give us your presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rick Daverage. As you mentioned, I'm chairman of the Alaska Veterans Foundation. As well as, you know, holding a number of other veteran leadership positions in the state. Recently served with the mayor's leadership team on homelessness in Anchorage, focusing predominantly on chronic inebriates. With me is Trevor Storr, who is the chairman of the Anchorage Homeless Coalition, and Susan, say your last name.
Bomolaski.
I never say it right. Bomolaski, who is in charge of Catholic Social Services, particularly with respect to the Brother Francis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Within the homeless community, Mr. Chairman, there are about 47 entities in Anchorage that have something to do with the homeless. And within that community, in my personal opinion, there are about a handful of very, very competent people that know what they're doing. We have two of them with us today. What I'd like to do is just, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for opening this discussion. I think it's about time we sat down and took a look at the question, what should the role of the state be in ending homelessness for veterans in Alaska? As you know, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs and the President have launched last year a five-year initiative to end homelessness for veterans in America. And I think it's an opportunity for the state perhaps to leverage or trailer on to some of those initiatives and hopefully some of the funds that are involved in those initiatives. I provided the committee with an outline of what I consider to be sort of the upfront key questions. How many veterans are homeless in Alaska? Readily admit, we don't know. We think we know based on a few things that we've been doing, the point-in-time count, which we do as a community twice a year. The stand downs that are held twice a year, out of those, we get a pretty good idea about the number of homeless veterans in the Anchorage area, which we think are about 80 to 100 at any given time. The Department of Veterans Affairs is required to report to Congress annually on what they're doing to try to solve the homeless veterans problem, and they have been reporting about 600 homeless veterans in Alaska. It wasn't until recently that we discovered that this is a number based on a formula, not based on any actual information. We think the best place to start this initiative would be in Anchorage. Anchorage is the home of the homeless, if you will, in the state. We have a growing population of homeless in here, and Susan and Trevor will talk about that. But we also have, I think we've got, what, five different task forces that have been held over the decade, and certainly the mayor's leadership team looking at the overall problem, I think it sort of brought a lot of that together and gave us some focus and some direction. The question that I had when I began to look at this issue, and I began to look at this issue reading back all the way to 1965, is what are we doing wrong? The United States of America and state and local governments cumulatively have spent well over hundreds of billions of dollars in trying to solve the homeless problem. One thing that we've done right is we've built very, very good and effective transitional housing. We can always use more, depending on the population demand, but we've done a pretty good job at that. Out of the total perspective or the spectrum of homeless, I think generically, nationally, at about 80% of the homeless come in as mainly as a result of a loss of job or some other major event that's happened in the family. They get the services, they get out, and they never come back again. But we have a constituency in that continuum of about 20%, depending on where you live in the United States, that are what we call the chronic homeless. And in that group, we have a large number of veterans.
Overrepresented
veterans. Thank you, Trevor. And as I mentioned to you, Mr. Chairman, previously, out of the deaths, the homeless deaths that we've had in the last 2 years, about 25% of those were veterans. We only make up 8% of the population in the United States. Currently, less than 1% of the United States are actually serving standing guard for America. So that's a disproportionate number. Why are so many veterans homeless? In talking to the professionals around the country that run homeless services, particularly for the Veterans Administration, you have two things that come together: mental health problems, predominantly post-traumatic stress, and other traumatic brain injuries that may be a result of combat or may not, may be the result of being homeless, and other factors. In addition to that, many of these guys and gals, which the largest growing component of homeless veterans now is young women, and many with children, they began to self-medicate to take care of their pain. And so you end up with what we call a dual diagnosis, mental deficiencies as well as chronic alcohol or drug abuse. The VA has one of the longest existing programs in the United States government called the domiciliary. The domiciliary is a transitional housing program and a treatment center, if you will. They do a very good job, and in fact, in the last 3 years, have dramatically improved their success rate here in Anchorage. The Anchorage domiciliary is effectively a statewide facility and moves a lot of veterans through there over the course of a number of years. The amount of time they spend there depends on their particular need, which can be 3 or 4 months up to 8, 9, maybe as long as a year. But what happens after they finish the program? Many of them do not have the capacity, because of their mental problems, to take care of themselves and make the kind of choices they need to make, even with disability, et cetera, in their day-to-day lives. And they end up coming back into the domiciliary 3 or 4 months later. One of the ideas that we're putting forward is something called long-term supportive housing. This is something that the VA has been requesting since they've been reporting to the United States Congress on the needs of veterans in the state of Alaska. Long-term supportive housing is very simple. It's a place that's warm and safe, which provides some kind of structured assistance with what we call nationally accredited veteran service officers. It provides just that little bit more of assistance and structure for these veterans who are, in fact, clean and sober, but are trying to make the transition back into regular life, if you will, but they just can't quite get there. One of the proposals in the foundation's package called Vet City deals with a series of cabins located on property, which has now been in the process of being acquired under agreement. We start with 28 cabins, and these are set up in different formats, one for singles, one for doubles, and one for families. There's no limitation on how long they can stay there, but they have to work and they have to make a contribution to the cost of the facilities and their services. The other part that's missing is what we call housing first. Anchorage has stepped forward with Aquatic Manor in the first major housing first project in the state, although they've been involved in this service for some time on a smaller scale. And one of the things that we learned in the mayor's task force is that housing first is the most effective way to get chronic homeless off the street and into warm and safe environment and then begin to give them the kind of services they need. This is a way, we think, both with the housing first facility that we've suggested in Eklutna and the long-term supportive housing, that we can effectively get the veterans, homeless veterans, off the street into warm and safe environments and help them begin to make the kind of choices they really need to make to be reintegrated in the community. Again, the question before the committee that we've suggested, and Mr. Chairman, again, we thank you for that, is what should the role of the state be? Many people intuitively say, well, veterans, that's a federal problem. Well, if a veteran has a service-connected disability, i.e., they were injured or wounded in service, that's true, but there are various gradations of disability, 100% down to 10%, depending on the seriousness of the injury and the long-term effects of it. But mental disabilities are not always immediately evident. I have a son, as you know, that's been 4 years in Iraq, and he is in transition. Coming back, he lives here in Anchorage. He's going to the University of Alaska. Still has a lot of problems with post-traumatic stress. He's been home 2 years, and he's still in the process of getting his disability worked out with the VA. So in the interim, he needs some help, and he's lucky to have a family that's able to provide him some help. So what is the role of the state? We were asking the question, or suggesting in our outline, that one of the things the state could do is help the foundation and Vet City and the community of Anchorage at least do the pre-development work on a project that fills in the two gaps. Long-term supportive housing with cabins and housing first for the people that are on the street to get them off, get them back into a program. And I'd like to have Trevor and Susan talk about their point of view on this issue. Trevor?
Thank you. I'm Trevor Storrs. I'm the co-chair of the Anchorage Coalition on Homelessness. And we think this is a really important project. And the reason for it is Rick is right, we're not too sure what the percentage is for veterans here in Anchorage or Alaska, but we do host an event called Project Homeless Connect twice a year, which serves both events between the summer event around 600 and the winter event around 800 individuals. Unique-wise, it's probably around 650 to 700, and approximately 15% of those individuals are classified as veterans. Many of them fall into two groups, the chronic alcoholic, inebriate folks, but also there's a lot of families that are also walking in who have veteran status and were part of our armed services. In the area of chronic, homeless, inebriate, definitely probably the number one national best practice is the housing first. A lot of people are reluctant by it just due to the fact that it is very different from most of our philosophy in the past, and it's very different from most treatment philosophies as well. In the sense of, if you want people not to be homeless, give them a home. No different than if they're hungry, give them food. Do not put strings on it. It's not about drinking or not drinking. It's about housing first. And then you start dealing with the other issues. Most people can't address their substance abuse, mental health illness, or any other thing they might be dealing with until they have housing. Think of yourself. If you didn't have housing, could you actually show up to work every day with your suit and tie, be able to be functional, be able to take your vitamins or medications, things of that nature? Housing First has that same concept. It has been hugely successful in the lower 48. And no matter how different we think us Alaskans are, we all still are part of the U.S., and we are very much the same, and it can and will be successful up here. So it's looking at, on a state level, how can you support the Housing First? Obviously, through HFC, the state support of that organization, they're a huge component of the first project, but we're going to need more dollars out there. Vet City will definitely help fill that for vets. One of the things I do caution is just building separate things for vets. It's important to have that, but at the same time, they are part of all of our systems. They use all of our services. They're not separate when they come through our door, so let's not make them too separate within our state. That way we have a full, holistic approach for all people. Families are the second part. Again, a lot of people actually don't believe families are experiencing homelessness, let alone those that were or even are part of the armed services. Many of the armed services, which Susan will probably even touch on, who actually even have an income, still use our food banks and many other social services. Those who leave end up finding themselves homeless. Many of them, as you know, are stationed somewhere far away from family. So they don't actually even have the resource to double up with brothers, mothers, fathers, things of that nature, and sometimes even have limited access to friends. So many of them access our shelter programs. We need to be looking at affordable housing. I don't know if anybody had the opportunity to listen in to Senator Davis's discussion yesterday about homelessness, but there's great information out there about cost of living. So, for example, here in Anchorage, you need to be making just under $19 an hour to afford a two-bedroom apartment and only work 40 hours. If you think most of the new businesses that are coming in and our growth is in either tourism or the box-type stores that are paying around $10, so unless you have a two-person income, you're barely making it. Many of our families are single and are only one is able to work because of children and so forth. So most of them struggle and are unable to access any type of housing and or be able to maintain it. So affordable housing and providing the support to create that, I think that's one of the biggest roles that the state can do. I know that the state struggles with the concept of supportive services and that ongoing cost, and that's another discussion. But definitely the one-time funding around capital projects and helping build affordable housing. What does that do for our state, but more importantly our community? It creates a safe community. It actually continues to provide the employment or in the employees for the different industries that are coming in that we're trying to promote and grow here, as well as it actually shows that it reduces crime, increases school attendance, and overall health of the community rises economically as well as spiritually. Another aspect and something the state can really look at, and we've actually suggested this to the Alaska Coalition as well as the governor's board that's looking at homelessness, is looking at TANF. TANF is a federal funded program that the state gets the money for. We have over 6,000 people currently on the wait list for Section 8. We could create a state program for subsidies. A lot of people need those. Without that, they can't actually afford housing. And then there's other programs that can be attached. Susan?
Just a minute, Susan. Let me
pause you for one second and see if the committee has any questions. Are there any? Yes, Senator Giesel has a question. And by the way, thank you all for your presentations. They were outstanding and really helping us raise the consciousness of the legislature on this issue. So, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This goes way back. Mr. Devich, on your handout here, it's the heading on it is, what should be the role of the state of Alaska in ending veteran homelessness? It's that handout. On page 2, at the top, the second bullet point states the recidivism rate of our DOM is percent. It doesn't say what it is. Perhaps you forgot to write that in. I just wondered if you had that information.
Information has not been made available, and I was told that the VA does not keep those numbers now.
Thank you.
Sorry, they don't keep the numbers. That was obviously something that I thought was important because in talking to homeless veterans who have been through the DOM many times, I wanted to know what the percentage of recidivism was, and I talked to the DOM just again yesterday, and they don't keep those numbers. I want to point out one other thing. On the supportive services, the thing that's different about veterans is, for the most part, supportive services are provided by the Veterans Administration, both in the clinic and in the hospital and with the National Veterans Service Officers Program. So unlike other areas in the homeless area, providing the facilities is really, for us, the big step. Providing the programs and the services that they're going to need are effectively available through relationships with the VA. Susan?
Thank you. If I could just pause for 1 second, and I think Senator Passman had a question.
Yes, I was, and absolutely thank you for the presentation, but what is the number of homeless in Anchorage as far as veterans, and then do we have the numbers in other regions of the state?
Susan has that,
and I think that she'll bring those numbers forward based on our latest point-in-time count, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let's hear from Susan then. Did you have a follow-up, Senator?
Is that number that Susan will be providing for homeless in general or veterans?
I have the veterans.
Perfect.
Came from the annual, the 2010 point-in-time count that we do here in the state. I have the Anchorage and Mat-Su number. I have the backup on another sheet here somewhere. Do we have...
Susan, if you could put yourself on the record and then go ahead and give us your testimony. And then if you don't have Fairbanks, I suspect that is a number that Senator Passman would be interested in. So please go ahead.
Okay. My name is Susan Bomolaski. I'm Executive Director of Catholic Social Services, and we run the Brother Francis Shelter along with many other programs. And most of our programs do interact with veterans in some ways. I just wanted to give you a little picture of the view from the Brother Francis Shelter. You may have heard about the high numbers there. I think they're seeing that at the rescue mission also in Fairbanks. Last year, we served about 3,100 people. Out of those, 524 were veterans. And these are individual male and females that are living there at Brother Francis Shelter. A lot of the people at Brother Francis Shelter are working. People don't understand that, but they're not able to move out because they can't find affordable housing or get a housing voucher, which you've already heard about some of that. We do have the highest percentage of veterans per capita here in Alaska. You probably already know that. We got that information from the Anchorage Regional VA office. In 2009, according to the annual homeless assessment report, there were 259 homeless veterans in Anchorage. So this is where the numbers get a little bit confusing. We have what's called Alaska Homeless Management Information System, which is AKHMIS, and that reports 450 individual veterans, which fits in with our Brother Francis Shelter number, and another 42 veteran head of household families that had 137 family members. So those numbers are a little bit different there, but they start to give you a picture of the homeless families. Other information that we've gotten from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is that the total number of very low income, which is defined as 50% or less of the area median income, is 285 families that are in public housing or have a voucher that they classify as very low income. There's another 313, and these are families, which can be an individual, it can be a family or a family with children, that are at risk of homelessness because they can't get housing. They can't get a voucher, they can't get into public housing, and they're currently doubled up. A final statistic, which you're probably tired of statistics, but I think helps give a picture, is that according to the 2009 American Community Survey, there are 3,053 veterans in Alaska, in the whole state, living below the poverty line and therefore at risk of homelessness due to lack of affordable housing. So those are some kind of chilling statistics, I think. Rick had mentioned that a lot of supportive services are out there for veterans, but they're not out there for the veteran family members. So there's been a new grant made available. It's a Veterans Administrative Supportive Services for Veterans Families grant that CSS just FedExed off the grant application yesterday that will help to serve those families with children as well as the individual veterans. And what that does is it helps us expand some of the services veterans are getting. According to the VA's 2009 challenge report, long-term permanent housing is number one, child care, legal assistance, SSI, VA benefits, and credit counseling are all in the top 10 highest unmet needs identified by the VA, by community providers, and by consumers. So these are through this collaborative grant. So when we look at what can the state do to help, I think we've got some great ideas here. The affordable housing has to be high up there, or the housing voucher program, like Trevor was saying. But if you've got a voucher and no housing to use it in, you're kind of stuck there. The supportive housing for individual veterans, as Rick was talking about, but also augmenting these supportive services that we're talking about in this VA grant. You know, we're a small state, so even though we have a high percentage, we're not always eligible for the higher amount of funding from these federal grants. So we put in to get two case managers that will intensively case manage 50 families. And what that means is this provides for rental subsidies, but only for a short amount of time, for up to 6 months. And then they're going to be on their own, which is where Trevor's idea of the Housing Choice Voucher program put on by the state kind of follows up with that. I'd like to give a quick story and then see if there are any questions. This story is an example of veterans that we see at Brother Francis Shelter. There's a young man named Quincy who joined the in 2018, and he spent 6 years in the military, part of which was in Operation Iraqi Freedom. That took a toll on him mentally and physically, and as Rick mentioned earlier, and also the senator mentioned, post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, and sciatica. He went home to Philadelphia. It didn't work for him there, so he moved to Alaska about a year ago. And as Trevor mentioned, you know, people don't have the support a lot of times, and they end up homeless, which is what happened to him. So he came to Brother Francis Shelter last December, met our case management supervisor, and started looking for employment. Unfortunately, he was caught in a dilemma because what he had done, he knew that when you applied for jobs, they do drug tests, and he felt his prescription medication would make him test positive. He didn't think about getting, you know, something from the doctor or whatever, so he stopped taking his prescription meds, which led to pain and spasms and complicated his mobility. So ultimately, we helped him get that straightened out, and he just got a job with the Salvation Army. He's working there as assistant kitchen manager in the adult rehab program, so he's able to live there. So he's got on his feet again, but he needed these supportive services. We also had a young woman who came to Brother Francis Shelter because she had also received an injury in the military. They were doing exercises where they were going into buildings. She was thrown up into the second floor of this building but missed it and was dropped and suffered severe injuries, found her prescription medications couldn't take care of it, so went to street drugs, which is a big problem that has already been mentioned about the need for substance abuse and mental health treatment. So, again, we were able to work with her and make the referrals, but you have to have that one-on-one case management, supportive services, and housing are the key, and I think the state can augment existing programs on that.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Senator Pasvan.
Yes, kind of returning to the question that I had initially, as I understand, under one counting system, 259 homeless veterans are in Anchorage, and what I was looking for is under that system, how many homeless veterans are there statewide, and in what regions are they at? And then if the other system, where you say that the number is much closer to about 100, again, what regions of 100, if that's the base, are there homeless veterans?
Chairman, one of the interesting things about talking about homeless veterans is what we call the definition of homeless veterans. Many agencies and many programs have varying definitions. One of the things that we've suggested is the state, as an entity, needs to take a look at this question. Where do we have homeless veterans? Who are they? Do they represent singles? Do they represent families, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And one of the things that in the program that we've laid out to try to do what we call the pre-development work is to do those kinds of specific measures. A lot of times these numbers are run by formulas for funding as opposed to actual counts. We interact with, and I'm absolutely blank on his name, Senator, a gentleman in Fairbanks who runs a religious-based shelter there.
Rescue Mission, who's done
an extraordinary job, and he and I meet often when we're at various meetings nationally or locally on homelessness. So you have a very active group in Fairbanks looking at this problem. I'd like to go back, if I may, to two specific issues. In the VA program, and VA and HUD in many cases have a relationship with respect to homeless veterans, you have very unique programs. One is called HUD VASH vouchers. These are specifically, effectively, Section 8 vouchers that are only available to veterans and veteran families. Secondly, we have something called grants and per diem within the VA. Grants and per diem will pay 65% of the cost of construction. So if we get through the pre-development process and we're successful through the grants and per diem program, 65% of the cost of construction for the Housing First and the cabin facilities would be paid for under the VA grant. Again, it's a way of leveraging the state's interest and the state strategy to bring in additional federal dollars that are available through these programs to help. Finally, we have something called nationally accredited veteran service officers. These are almost always veterans who go through an extraordinary amount of training and effectively become coaches, if you will, and in some cases life coaches, not only helping the veteran and their family access their services and benefits which they've earned through service and sacrifice, but also helping steering them towards Catholic Social Services or various other programs that can provide assistance. So the idea of having a program that focuses on vets, at least 75% of the residents there must be veterans, but 25% can be non-veterans. But it allows us to leverage those federal programs. I've got three pages of programs that are available specifically to help homeless veterans, but you have to have a program that meets the definitions and the requirements through which to leverage these kinds of resources.
Yes, Senator Pasvan, and go ahead.
What I'm trying to understand better is what is the magnitude of the homeless veterans problem on a statewide basis, and however we can get there, are the numbers that are being presented, does Anchorage compose one-third of the state's homeless veterans? Is it 40%? Is it 20%? That's what I'm trying to ascertain.
Sir, yes, sir. I went back to the numbers here, and I did make a misstatement earlier that 259, and this is according to the AHAR, was for Alaska. It was 259 out of 1992 total. In Anchorage, it was 145. And that's from the point-in-time count in 2010. Now, you know, there's all kinds of different methods there, but that's what it shows. So if you look at that, if you're looking at 145 Anchorage and the rest of the state is 259, it's over half, 60% or so.
And we find this, Mr. Chairman, we find this to be the case when we're into the camps, and we go into the camps and help get people to come to the point-in-time count because, one, we can count them, number two, and two, we provide services at this, and Trevor's done an extraordinary job with this program. I think we've been doing it?
Four years.
And it gets better every year. But one of the things we find in doing this is we interact with people and we find all kinds of veterans that are homeless in Alaska that have come to Anchorage because there's a perception that Anchorage has the capacity to provide the kinds of assistance and services. And we have the highest concentrations of veterans in the state, obviously in Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. And within that community, we have a large number of nationally accredited veteran service officers.
So let me just pause for 1 second and say I'll have my staffer, Carla, who's staffing us today, who did great job setting up the teleconference. We'll try to get the data on, see if there is data available on statewide where the homeless problem is percentage-wise. Other questions by the committee? Yes, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered if you had any cost figures For a homeless veteran in Anchorage, they're probably accessing services. I mean, it's costing the city of Anchorage something. What does it amount to, and what would the savings be? And then, of course, what would the cost be if they were in a Housing First type program? You know, what kind of savings would we see, that kind of thing, in monetary terms?
Yeah, good question.
We haven't done the formal study here in Alaska, but again, our costs are either higher or equal to places like Seattle, Philadelphia, places that have done those specific studies, which takes a lot of time, so we've used them. They're approximately, per person, they range from $100,000 to $150,000 if they're chronically homeless, which means they've used the ER system. They are probably in the jail system, police time, fire department time, shelter time, everything. Putting it together, 1 year, they can range between $100,000 and $150,000. When placed in the Housing First project, they are between $25,000 and $30,000 a cost. And that's primarily to be covering the housing as well as the supported services. Now, when you speak of savings, I want to be very careful. You don't start seeing money showing up in a bank account and it's starting to grow like what we do for a retirement savings. What happens is the resources that you have don't have to grow as fast. You don't have to bring on another 10 police because they're busy picking up folks off the street, as well as their time that are currently in place are being focused in other areas. So it's saving of growth and overall resources in the sense of time. ERs aren't flooded, so they're able to focus in on other people's needs. They're not being used as a primary health care, so people's health, as well as what's happening with the individuals is they're starting to access greater support services. They usually start contributing back to the community by volunteering. Some of them actually, just like the Homeward Bound program, they start paying back their restitution because they're getting funds. So they have tickets they have to pay for, things of that nature. So we start seeing just a more healthier community, and that is where the savings is. It's not hard cash.
Mr. Chairman, there are two books that have been written on this question. One dealing with a specific individual in the United States in Reno, Nevada. One dealing with an individual in Sydney, Australia. These individuals were followed through many years of their life, chronic homeless, et cetera, et cetera. And the assessment of these two independent efforts found that these individuals in their adult life cost those communities well over $1 million during the course of their life in the use of public services, if you will.
Thank you. Great question. Good discussion. Yeah, did you have a follow-up, Senator Giesel?
I do, and thank you. That was a perfect answer. That was exactly targeting what I was wondering about. This is another question that's a little bit perhaps off, but off topic. I understand that Anchorage City Church is a partner with the City of Anchorage, and you talked about the expansion, the increase in the number of single moms who are veterans who are homeless. And I believe Anchorage City Church was putting together a privately funded shelter for single moms with children. Is that been launched yet? Do you know how many veterans they might be housing?
I can speak to that, ma'am. They have launched it. It's called Beacon Hill, and it's full, but I can't tell you how many are veterans. I'm sure we can find that out just by calling over there to a charity who's over there. So they have launched that. The other thing that they are helping us with is the emergency cold weather plan for homeless families with children. So City Church has been a real collaborator here, but we can find that out and get it back to you.
If you could get that back, if you could get that to my office, and then we'll distribute it to all the committee members, that'd be great.
We just received a report yesterday from my national office. One of the interesting things that's beginning to develop, and I don't know why we're surprised by this, but the number of female veterans who are being divorced, finding themselves divorced within 18 months of separation from service, dramatically increased and is effectively parallel to what happens to male veterans, too. And this is sort of accelerating this homeless problem because their support service breaks down and they end up having to find a way to keep their family intact, but also find a new way to make a living or take care of themselves.
And that's where this Supportive Service for Veterans Families grant that we just applied for will really help with that.
Other questions from the committee? Let me we've got a couple minutes left. Let me, if I could, just ask you real quickly if each one of you could give me the top two or three things that you think the legislature, the state should could do this year to help help solve the veteran homeless problem.
Mr. Chairman, for us, we have an opportunity to leverage, if you will, state interest and state strategies with federal interest and federal strategies and funding. And it's one of the reasons why we're actually sitting here today is encouraging the state to step forward. The foundation has put together a $300,000 pre-development study which develops in full all of these facilities, et cetera, in the Anchorage area, and sets up a five-year financial sustainability plan, which is developed through a contractor with the VA. That enables the facilities to, one, be built, and two, to be taken care of on a five-year strategy. There is enormous amounts of money available right now and certainly over the next couple of years, even with the budget crunch in D.C. There is a great sympathy for the need of veterans, particularly homeless veterans. So the idea is to get the state to step up, participate as a partner in this, and help us leverage some of these other grants that can come in and cover as much as 65% of the cost of construction.
Thanks, Rick. And Trevor or Susan?
Definitely. With this project that we have before us, really looking at that, this issue is going to take multi-strategy, so it's not one over the other. This one is in the forefront. Let's take advantage of it and also start talking about the second one. And the second thing I think the state can be really looking at is how can they really utilize Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Currently, the state takes a lot of money out of that and put it to general funds. We need to leave that with them, either create a housing trust or really instruct them. We need to start promoting not just us building, but developers. Just so you know, here in Anchorage, we've seen a huge decrease in just family homes being permits. In 2002, we saw 413. In 2009, it was 86. We need to encourage not just us as a state or the nonprofits to build, but we need the developers and really be giving that investment. And that's where AHFC. So those are the two things I would suggest.
And I'll to that, there's only a 2% vacancy rate here. And if you couple that with what the stats Trevor was giving on the wage that's required for a fair market rent, you've got almost no housing available. So I support both of those. And then I throw in supportive services because, as Rick mentioned in the beginning, a lot of people that are veterans have suffered trauma and they're in need of the supportive services to maintain housing stability.
Outstanding. Other questions, final questions by the committee? Okay. I really want to thank Rick and Trevor and Susan for appearing before us on this historic occasion. It worked well, I thought. Thanks to Carla and Legislative Affairs for helping set this up. LIO for helping set this up. And we're going to close this. I really appreciate the comments and suggestions you've made. We will be in contact with you to try to answer some of the questions that committee members had and also to maybe flesh out some more of your ideas that you've had. Thank you for helping raise our awareness on this issue. And we look forward to continuing the dialogue. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you for the opportunity.